أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد.
السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. We thank Allah سبحانه وتعالى for giving us this opportunity once again. Yet another Muharram, another Ashura, inshallah, to experience, another love to experience again, so that we can be affected to be better Muslims, inshallah, throughout the year, inshallah. Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, what he did wasn't something that wasn't planned from before. Tonight is going to be an introduction into our series, inshallah. So tonight's going to be important. I'm going to start it from here. That Aba Abdullah alayhi salam, he started a movement in which there was no way for this movement to take place except with his absence. Imam Hussein has to be absent. A movement with the absence of the Imam. In other words, his blood has to be spilled. There was no other way. Bani Umayya, and I need you to pay attention to this. Bani Umayya had tightened its grip. These arch enemies of Islam, not the Prophet, not the Imams, everything. They were enemies of everything. Bani Umayya tightened its grip on Khilafah. And Muawiyah had set this plan to destroy Islam, continuing the work of his father Abu Sufyan, of course. And you can see this when Abu Sufyan, in his 90s, once he sees that the Khilafah has come to Uthman, who is of Bani Umayya, when he goes to the grave of Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada alayhi salam, and he kicks the grave of Hamza Sayyid al-Shuhada, and he says, "You see now, that which we were fighting for has come back to us." This is what they were after. Bani Umayya has taken over the Khilafah. In other words, Bani Umayya, whatever it wants to do, can do now, and slowly can eradicate Islam. It reaches a point that Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees that for the only way for Islam to continue is for the purest of bloods to be spilled. Not only his blood. Bidam al-Madhloom, when we say, the ulama say, what is meant by Dam al-Madhloom is Ali al-Asghar. This blood has to be spilled because after Imam Hussein, there is no more Al-Aba, no more members of Al-Aba. The members of the cloak that the Prophet said, they are my Ahlul Bayt. After Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Imam Sajjad doesn't have that status amongst the people. Imam Hussein says, I am the last hope, my blood needs to be spilled. And it is spilled. A seed is planted. I want us to pay attention. A seed is planted. When you plant a seed, what do? Once you've planted it, do you just go home and let it do what it needs to do? Of course not. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he plants the seed, which is his existence, through his blood. Now others have to take care of this seed. Preserve this very fragile seed. Make sure that it grows into the tree that it's supposed to grow into, so that then this tree overshadows the tree of Bani Umayya. And it uproots this tree of Bani Umayya, which it did. Bani Umayya didn't last long. 80 years maybe. If Bani Abbas came after Bani Umayya, they weren't able to do anything. Because Islam's roots had grown strong with the blood of Aba Abdullah. This seed was planted by Aba Abdullah alayhi salam. Someone has to preserve it now and water it. We want to look at some of the ways Islam, the Ahlul Bayt, what did they do to preserve this? And as I said, this is an introduction and we're moving into our topic. These are all related to each other, so inshallah the brothers can follow. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. One of the things that was done by the Ahlul Bayt, Lady Zainab and Imam Sajjad alayhim as-salam did, they raised the awareness of the people. It's not that they just let this seed be planted and they go home. and they don't care about what happens. No. Oh, he did what he had to do. We're just going to go home now. No, no. They say Hussein did what he did. Now it's time for the Zainabiyun to do what they need to do. They raised awareness. Every year, commemoration. Ever since they got back from Karbala, Lady Zainab, she doesn't sit quietly. She spreads the message. Make sure that this message reaches everywhere. And Bani Umayyah, their image is destroyed in the eyes of the people. What else do we have? It's interesting here. Now, this is a little bit touchy. But there were some movements that happened after Ashura. Some uprisings, bloodshed happened. Some of the Hashemites were killed fighting the oppressive rulers of their time after Abu Abdullah alayhi salam. But our great ulama, they say that the Ahlul Bayt, they told them to refrain from this. It's interesting. Why? Those great ulama explain why. They say, once again, the seed that was planted on Ashura, the Ahlul Bayt didn't want it to be overshadowed by anything else. Any other blood that's going to be spilled in the name of Islam. It's interesting. When you sit at the feet of these great ulama, when I say great ulama, I'm not talking about normal ulama, I'm talking about huge ulama who spent 50 years doing history. Some of them will tell you that this was the reason why Ahlul Bayt, they were so sensitive about Ashura that they even told others to refrain from making too much noise. And of course, this is a touchy subject. Some of these revolts that happened, they were not sanctioned by the imams. Some, I'm not going to say all. Horrific incidents that took place in these uprisings and how they were suppressed and silenced and killed. Anyway, that's another thing that the Ahlul Bayt were careful about. They said he did what he was supposed to do. We're doing our job now. You don't have to do what Imam Hussein did necessarily in that time, of course. I'm talking in that context of after Ashura and before the Abbasids came to power. Okay. Another thing. Let's get closer to what we're talking about these nights, inshallah. Another thing that Ahlul Bayt have done is that they have encouraged, from the beginning, the ziyarah of Abu Abdullah Hussein alayhi salam. Alhamdulillah, over these years and recently, we're getting more and more zuwar. If the world was to allow the Shia to have a voice, God knows how powerful the message would spread across the world. Impossible to stop it. You speak to people who have gone from non-Muslim to Sunni, from Sunni to Shia, I can understand the non-Muslim to Muslim, but I can't understand Sunni to Shia, what influenced you? Because they are the mainstream at the end of the day. Who are we kidding? And they say, well, we heard about Imam Hussein alayhi salam. That's it? Yes, that's it. And I have a whole series on this somewhere else I spoke about before. How Ashura proves, goes all the way back. Not only just takes out Bani Umayyah, it'll take out what happened before Bani Umayyah. All the way to the Prophet Imam Ali's time. Some people, they see this, but the message is being suppressed. People are not being allowed to hear about Ashura, Imam Hussein. It's interesting. The person is Arab, living in an Arab country, of the Sunni school of thought of our brothers of Ahlul Sunnah, hasn't heard about Ashura, hasn't heard about Imam Hussein. Two lines of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is enough for them to know what's going on. Interesting. Things start to fall into place when you listen, when you look into Ashura more. But they don't let the message get out. They don't let the Shia get the message out. Not only that, Islam is spreading. And then that's why they get all these extremists to do what they need to do to give a bad image to Islam, unfortunately. But let me tell you, brothers. Let me tell you that in the end, this is not the first time that it's like this. In the end, logic prevails. In the end, the message of the Ahlul Bayt will prevail, inshallah. So they, the Ahlul Bayt, pushed for ziyarah of Abu Abdullah now. And the rewards that we'll talk about of ziyarah, for example, and not just Imam Hussein alayhi salam, all the Ahlul Bayt. Let me give you another example first, and then we'll get to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Al-Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, inshallah, we all get the ziyarah of, have the opportunity of his ziyarah. Al-Gharib al-Madfoon bi-Ardi Tus, the one who is buried far away from everyone else. who after Imam Hussein, you can say his departure from Medina was the most madlum departure. We'll talk about that later, inshallah. Imam Ridha alayhi salam, they came to Imam al-Jawad, the son of Imam Ridha alayhi salam. They asked him, we've heard, you know, maybe he, the guy that's asking might have put his hand, his arm on his waist like this and, you know, asking like, we've heard that the ziyarah of your father is equal to 1,000 hajj. Are you kidding me? Well, I added that part. The person asking didn't say that. They say it's 1,000 hajj. Imam Jawad, they say he began to weep. And he said, 1,000,000 hajj. Bal alf hajj. Bal alf hajj. 1,000,000, meaning 1,000,000. Because there's no other way to keep the message alive. Many people don't believe in the, of back then, didn't believe in the Imam of Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam. They stopped at Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam. Imam Jawad is encouraging. Now someone, let me open a parenthesis here. Our younger ones might have this in mind. I had it in mind when I was younger. I'm still young too. But I don't have the question in my mind anymore. That 1,000,000 hajj, I can do good. I'll do with 10. 10 is enough for me. Brothers, keep this in mind. That on the day of judgment, who knows? They might say, you might see, you're sitting there in Jannah, right? You got a newspaper in your hand. If there are any newspapers, who's going to go to Jannah if there's newspapers? Newspapers are for this life, not for there. But let's just say, you see an advertisement that says, yes, whoever wants to live next to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it doesn't cost too much, only 1,500 hajj. 500,000 hajj. So you go, you knock on the door of the angels, you say, oh angels, what's up? What gives? I lived for 100 years, inshallah. I lived for 100 years, you can only do hajj once a year. So how could anyone pay for this? And then they'll say, well, didn't you hear the hadiths about the ziyarah of Imam Ridha alayhi salam? You could have gone once at least, and that would have gotten you two homes next to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Problem is, we don't take it seriously that much. Problem is, we look at things with this dunya standards. Oh, 10 is enough, 20 is enough. I can't eat that much. They say, for example, in Jannah, you eat chicken, it takes 700 years to finish that chicken. So going by these standards, say, oh, that's boring, oh, this and that. These things, shaitan puts them in front of us so that we miss out. And then there we see, oh my God, we could have taken pleasure in every second of it. We wouldn't have gotten tired. But too bad for us because we didn't take it seriously. Anyway, let's close that parenthesis. Let's go back to what we were saying. These 1,000,000 hajj reward for Imam Ridha's ziyarah, subhanAllah. The Ahlul Bayt, they were keeping it alive. Also through Imam Hussein was no exception. The ziyarah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the Imams have said, كَمَنْ زَارَ عَرْشَ اللَّهِ. A person who does ziyarah of Aba Abdullah Hussein is as if he has done ziyarah of the throne of Allah, Arshullah. I was in Medina last year and I had this little debate, and I talk about this all the everywhere, about this debate that I had with this Wahhabi scholar. I'll just share this part with you. He went downstairs. He said, wait a minute. He went downstairs after like halfway into our debate. I wasn't a debate. I was just learning what they have to say, and I was trying to let him know what we say. So he went. He said, one second. He went in. I thought he's going to come out with something that's going to probably take my life. But he went. He came back with a book. He came back with a book. It said, مَذَا تَقُولُ الشِّيَعَ. What the Shias say. He opened it up. He said, see, this is what you people say. He showed me a hadith that the Quran is altered, has been altered. I said, we don't believe in this. Another hadith about something else. We don't believe in this. One after another, I said, not this. We don't believe in this. And then he opened it up. I said, give me the book. Let me do an istikhara. Let me just open one up, see what comes up. I opened it up. A hadith came that I just said, مَنْ زَارَ الْحُسَيْنَ كَمَنْ زَارَ اللَّهِ. He says, see? I said, yes, we believe in this one. What are you going to do about it? And I started running. No, I didn't run. It's interesting how even them, they are uninformed, many of them. Anyway, that itself is a long story. Yes, we believe in these things. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's ziyarah is this great. Okay, well, why are the Ahlul Bayt pushing for this? What are they trying to keep alive? They're trying to keep that blood that was spilled on the 10th of Muharram. They're trying to keep it fresh. That's what it is. Because if that's lost, the madhab, at least the madhab of Shia is gone. We have hadith by Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. That he says, the same way the Kaaba guarantees the survival of Islam, Imam Hussein guarantees the survival of the madhab. So this is why the Imams pushed for it. When you go for ziyarah, it has an effect. It stays with you. It's not something that anyone can take from you. That's why our ulama were so insistent on going ziyarah. Not from far away. I want to go. They say Imam Khomeini in Najaf, those years that he was in Najaf, he would go for ziyarah every day to the haram of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now what happens is one day it's raining. His son says, Imam Ali can hear your salam from home. Let's not go. He said, don't take this from me. Don't take this ziyarah from me. It's very important. So this is also one thing that they did. Now, some people don't have that luxury of being able to do ziyarah though. For whatever reason, perfectly fine. Although we have to, according to hadith, try our best to go for ziyarah. And there are some interesting and harsh hadith, as a matter of fact, for those people who don't go on purpose for no reason. But for whatever reason, one person cannot go. Once again, to keep this message alive, Ahlul Bayt, what did they do? They taught their followers ziyarahs from far away. Ziyarah texts and literature that can be recited so that somewhat of a connection is established between the Imam and ourselves. Now these ziyarats, they're not just say assalamu alaik. Sometimes they're one page long. Sometimes they're 2 pages long. Sometimes 3, sometimes 10. Ziyarah Jama'a Kabira is pretty long. So it's not just a salam that is given. No, the Imams also, they've done some magic here. When I say magic, I don't mean this magic. I'm talking the real thing. Touching the hearts, touching the minds, teaching through these ziyarahs. So you will see that these ziyarahs are full of ma'arif. Ma'arif. Teachings of Islam, teachings about the Imams and Imama. For example, some will find that, oh, this discussion of whether or not the Imams are infallible, because this is a discussion out there, although the mainstream and 99% believe that yes, the Imams are ma'soom, but there are some who might have a little bit of a doubt. One of the arguments that's used is what we find in these ziyarats. For example, asamakum Allahu min az-zalal. Allah has protected you, asamakum isma, has protected you from mistakes and falling and these types of things. Left and right, you find teachings about the Ahlul Bayt, about the Imams and Imama here. You find these concepts about how the Imams are the channel of Allah's grace through which His grace flows. If there is no Imam, the world will cease to exist, for example. You find this in the ziyarat. In Ziyarah Jama'a Kabira, it says, if it wasn't for you, it wouldn't rain. Very simple. It wouldn't rain. And inshallah we'll have a talk about this. We're going to have a seminar for the brothers, for the youth, which means all of you. And we'll talk about what's so good about an imam that's in hiding. What is the main purpose of an imam? Figure that out. So then we see if that is compromised when he is in hiding, then that's not a good imam. But if the main reason for an imam is preserved even when he's in hiding, then there's nothing wrong with an imam that's in hiding. And all these things that people say are secondary issues. They're not the main reason for an imam. Anyway, we find these teachings in these ziyarat. Okay, so as you can see, these ziyarat get very important to the extent that there are some things that man would have never reached with his mind. I shouldn't say this one out loud. I don't want the Wahhabis to hear this. In the famous ziyarah of the month of Rajab that they say recite every day about the imams, there's this one part that you got to be careful. It's too lofty. Not everyone's ready to hear it. La farqa, O Allah, la farqa. And this is an excerpt. La farqa baynaka wa baynaha or wa baynahum. illa annahuma ibaduka wa khalquk. There is no difference. I don't know, should I say this or not? There is no difference between you, Allah, and them, the ma'sumin. There's no difference except one difference. They are your ibad and servants, and they are your creation. Your existence is necessary, their existence is contingent, so to speak, theologically speaking. So, there's no other difference. What does that mean? This is something ulama have to come and break down. And some great ulama have spoken about these. Where do we get this from? Could I ever have thought of this? No. We get these things through these ziyarat. Okay. So these are very important issues. If it's going to be something this important, there's one obstacle that remains for us between us and benefiting from these ziyarat that are recorded in the books. Recite a salawat, please. What is that obstacle? The obstacle, the problem that we have is that I did not hear this ziyara straight from the Imam's mouth. If I had heard it straight from the Imam, I would know, okay, this is what it is. This is the case. This is actually the case. But what if one person comes and tells you something, and when he tells you it, he says that so-and-so told me, that so-and-so told me, that so-and-so told me, till like 10 people, that they heard so-and-so say this. We don't become 100% sure that every word and all the wording in that narration necessarily was said and verbalized by that first individual who said that. You get what I'm saying? This is an obstacle that we have. So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to get rid of this obstacle, right? If we want to really draw conclusions from something, we have to be able to rely on that report. That's why they say these ziyarat are tawqifi. Tawqifi means that you can't make it up. You can't make it up. You have to hear it or ascertain that someone said it. You can't add or subtract things because they might be true or because they might sound right. And this in here, those of you who are interested, you can go to Mafatih al-Jannah. We all have a copy of it in our homes, yes? The ziyarah, one of the ziyarats of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam, it ends with the ziyarah of Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam. There, for 3 or 4 pages, Shaykh Abbas al-Qummi, the author of Mafatih, you can tell he is angry. Why? Because he says, after the ziyarah, he says, some people have added this and this and this and this to the end of this ziyarah. And then he goes on and on about how he uses a word that I don't want to use here. And it's not a curse word, but at the end of the day, it's not a positive word either. That these so-and-so people are doing this. Of course, this isn't a very, very bad word in Arabic. So he says, ahmaq. That's the translation of it. Ahmaq. That there are ahmaq people that are doing this. Okay, Shaykh Abbas Qumi, what's wrong? They added a few lines. There's nothing wrong with that. Ziyarat are tawqifi. Sometimes you go to the Imam, you say, Assalamu alayk. Oh, Imam, that's okay. But if you want to say this is an actual ziyarah of Islam, of the Imams, then it has to have actually been said by the Imams. You can't add anything to it or take anything out of it. You can't. And then he cites this hadith. I call this a super hadith. Because it gives us a formula. Gives us a measuring stick. It's talking about the Imam. He's telling one of his companions who is in trouble. He's going through hard times. He says, recite the dua al-ghariq. And that the individual, he says, oh, okay, I'll recite that. You know, the one that says, the companion says this. He says, Ya muqallib al-qulubi wal-absar, thabbit qalbi ala dinik. Famous dua. The Imam says to his companion, he says, it's true, you're right. Allah is the muqallib al-qulub wal-absar. But say it the way I tell you to say it. Say, Ya muqallib al-qulub, thabbit qalbi ala dinik. Don't add wal-absar. But Imam, it's true that Allah is muqallib al-qulub wal-absar. He says, I don't care if it's true or not. I'm telling you, say it like this. And you know that we, the Ahlul Bayt, are to be followed without question, right? If you don't believe that, then go fix that. But if you do believe that, then it all boils down to what I say. You go by what I say. This is what I'm telling you to say. So it becomes very sensitive, brothers, you see? They're tawqifi, we have to make sure the Imam said this. Okay, so what are we going to do now? We're stuck. And this is where I have to get this off my chest, brothers. The Imam is saying that this ziyarah, say it like this. This dua, say it like this. And then we have people who, nowadays they go by the law of, you are entitled to your own opinion. The law of, you're entitled to your own opinion. Brothers and sisters, if they're hearing, it's not whether or not it's even true or not. The Imam is saying even if it's true, you have to go through the means when you want to say it. Islamic knowledge, there is a means of gaining it. There is a means of gaining it. Sometimes you're right, but you went through the wrong means. We have a hadith for this, brothers. Sometimes you're right. You went through the wrong means, you're still going to be held responsible. Let alone if you're wrong and you went through the wrong means. I think that's double the trouble. Let alone if you say the wrong thing. Because you went through the wrong means, and it just so happens to be something that Islam is very sensitive about. Al-umur al-muhimma, they call it. If it's one of those things and you mess up in it, man, are we going to be held responsible on the Day of Judgment? But there's this hype now, there's this trend of Facebook. If you have an account, then you are an alim. Okay. This is while, let me say this, it's famous. They say Ayatollah Behjat, rahmatullah alayh, people would go to him, tullab of the Hawza, students of the Hawza, they would go to him. They would say, we're going for tabligh, we want to go out and speak about Islam. What would he say? What was his only advice to them? He would say, speak about the qat'iyat, please. The qat'iyat, meaning what? Those things that are solidly proven in Islam. Don't talk about things that we're not sure about, even I'm not sure about, now you're going and talking about it. But mashallah, nowadays you see, not only are, you know, people speaking things here and there, but it's talking about, they're talking about things that maraji haven't even come to a conclusion to. Yes? Let alone a normal Hawza student, or let alone a person who's never been to Hawza even. So now, Shaykh, are you saying that no one except someone from Hawza should speak about Islam? No. No. And I'm sure that many of those out there who haven't done the actual work, but they have studied books and are speaking, they have the best intentions. I'm sure about this. But brothers, one thing to keep in mind is what is being the point I'm trying to make is not that only people from Hawza should speak. No. But we should know our limits and where we should stop. Unfortunately, nowadays, I feel, judging from what topics are spoken about sometimes, what conclusions are sometimes drawn by certain people, I just feel like these lines are blurred, unfortunately. And this might cause problems in the future in this dunya. But what's for sure is, if they're aware of this, then it's going to cause major problems in the akhirah. And they will be held responsible. So we have to be careful. Even a sheikh who knows that he has not researched in certain fields shouldn't speak about that field. You get what I'm saying? It's very simple. Right? Okay, so now how do we ascertain that this ziyarah, this dua was said by the imam? How do we ascertain that? It's not that hard. Well, actually, it is pretty hard. Two sciences of Rijal and Diraya. I have no choice to talk about these things because I'm going to make a point here. Rijal and Diraya. Very quickly, in a nutshell, what are these two sciences? Rijal talks about, as you can see, the name says it, the people, or Rijal means men, because usually the ones that were transmitting hadiths were men. So it means the individuals in these chains of narrators of hadiths and ziyarat and so on. Each of them is discussed separately in Ilm al-Rijal. There are a lot of points here. Okay, this definition that I just gave is not a good one, but I'm just for now, we're just going to go with this. Rijal talks about these units in hadith. each of these people in the chain of narrators, Ilmu al-Rijal talks about them separately. Now, we know who these individuals are. Now, such a hadith with this individual, this individual, this individual has this much value. The value that is given to a hadith, the science of diraya, is the one that takes care of this. It says this hadith is hasan, this hadith is sahih, this hadith is this, this hadith is that. Each of these have their own value in that system and science. Okay. In other words, if I'm going to break it down to two, you either have a perfect chain of narrators or you don't. Okay? The perfect chain of narrators is referred to as sahih. So does that mean that all the non-sahih narrations, all the non-perfect ones are of no use and no good? I'm saying these things because I need it for the end of the talk, brothers. I need you to follow. Does that mean any non-perfect hadith, a hadith that we have to do research on the chain to fix it somehow, that's not a good hadith anymore? We can't use it? No. What a non-perfect chain of narrators means is that, okay, sometimes there are weak people, liars in this hadith. We'll put the hadith aside. Sometimes, no, it's not a weak person. It's not a person that lies or whatever. No, it's a person that people have not spoken about. We don't know who this person was. Maybe he was good, maybe he wasn't good. It doesn't mean we put it aside necessarily completely. Because why? If we have other hadith that are similar to this one in their content that support it, this helps it out. If there are others and individuals in this hadith who usually will narrate hadiths from people that are only trustworthy, it just so happens after 1200 years or 1300 years or 1400 years, we don't know who that individual was. But since they narrated from him, that also helps, and so on and so forth. There are different things here that we have. It doesn't always mean that the non-perfect hadith is put aside. Sometimes this hadith, the chain, half of them, we don't know them. We don't know who they are. But upon research, we find out that yes, this is an acceptable chain of narrators, and the hadith will be accepted and used. Okay. Having said all of that, we have two extremes, brothers. And it's interesting how Imam Ali, alayhi salam, he says, لا يرى أو ما يرى الجاهل إلا مفرطا أو مفرطا. That you will never see the jahil. We all know who jahil is, right? Brother jahil. The jahil, an unlearned, an ignorant one, you will always see him on this extreme or that extreme. Generally, extreme people usually have a lack of knowledge. That's why they fall to an extreme. They will take things literally, all the way. Yadullahi fawqa aydihim. Allah's hand is on their hand. In the Quran it says this. So the person will say, God has a hand. Okay? Without looking at anything else of Islamic literature, God has a hand. This is also something we debated with the brother Wahhabi that I found in Medina last year. Okay. God has a hand. Okay, anyway, extreme. We have one extreme here that says, we will accept all hadiths in any hadith book. This ilm al-rijal, ilm al-diraya, is here to refine them. A person who has the least information about hadith and hadith sciences and recording of hadith will know how these hadiths were transferred and how many of them were altered and touched. So they won't just say, any hadith I find in any hadith book is as if the ma'asum said it himself. And that's when... this one, I don't know, laugh, cry, I don't know, what should I do? What should I do? That they'll tell you, you'll tell somebody, the marja, your marja says this. He says, I follow ma'asum, I don't follow non-ma'asum. Okay, tell me. Which ma'asum told you this that goes against what the marja is saying? He says, I saw it in a hadith book. Okay, you saw it in the hadith book. The marja, you don't think he saw this hadith plus the other 10 relevant hadiths? Don't you think he saw that? That's what his job is. He's been doing this for 60 years in the Hawza. Something some of us can't even do for 60 minutes. 60 years? He's looking at different hadiths, bouncing them off of each other, reconciling, putting them together, taking them apart. It's like detective work. It's hard. It's very hard. No. I follow Ma'sum. Okay, which Ma'sum told you? I found it in the book. So, one extreme says, hadith in a hadith book equals the Ma'sum said it. And then here, lots of people, unfortunately, that sometimes you have great, high-caliber ulama that are vilified, na'udhu billah, unfortunately, because of this argument, that he's not Ma'sum, who is he? The same way we have sciences, different sciences, we also have the science of Islam and the science of hadith studies. His conclusion is this, another's is that. How dare you say he's not Muslim, he's not Shia anymore? That's not how it works, it's funny. Oh, that person, his diagnosis is different than mine. You're not even a doctor anymore. The guy's been a doctor, a surgeon for 30 years. His diagnosis is different. So you say you're not a doctor anymore. How funny is that? Once again, I don't know if it's funny or something we cry about. But yeah, Islam has always been madloom. That's one extreme. And then now we have the other extreme, which is bringing us closer and closer to our topic. We have the other extreme that says we are not going to take any hadith except the perfect sanad ones. The ones with a perfect chain of narrators. That's the only one we'll take. Anything else, throw it away, na'udhu billah. I hate to use that word. Put it aside. Brothers, it's not mathematics. These sciences are not 2 plus 2 equals 4. Just because all of the individuals in this chain of narrators are not perfect doesn't mean that it's going to be bad. And the opposite too. Sometimes you will have a perfect chain of narrators that from Shaykh al-Saduq all the way till today, all the ulama have turned away from that hadith, although the chain is very good. You will sometimes even have a chain of narrators that says that the Prophet committed mistakes. It goes against a well-established principle. We'll say, okay, we'll put this on the side. It's not mathematical like that. That's why I call it detective work. A little clue here, a little clue there. Add this context clue, add that context clue. Oh my God, all of a sudden, a hadith that has a chain of narrators that didn't look that good, all of a sudden becomes super beautiful and can be relied on. But some people look at it like this. Once again, why? Because of the lack of knowledge. مَا رَأَيْتُ or مَا يُرَى الْجَاهِلُ إِلَّا مُفْرِطًا أَوْ مُفَرِّطًا. So what are we talking about, inshallah? We're talking about زِيَارَةِ عَشُورَى. I wasn't going to talk about all of this tonight, this intro, but then I was asked by some to shed some light on it, and I agree. It is something that sometimes here and there you will hear, because there are great ulama who have said something about the chain of narrators of Ziyarat Ashura. But we want to see exactly what it is. Has this individual, who is a great individual, I'm not going to say his name, has he said that this, the chain of narrators of this Ziyarah is a fake one, is an unreliable one, no matter what, it's bad, it's weak, and all of that? Is that what he has said? Or has he said other things? And also, if he has said that, what have other greats of the Maraji said? Inshallah, that's something I want to talk about before we end. Sometimes some of these ulama, they will say something, it has to be interpreted and explained to the masses. If it is not explained, people will interpret it their own way. Because as you know, people like to do black and white. They like to go black and white. Either this or that. Don't say anything to me in the middle. Is this music haram or halal? Yeah, they'll come up to you when they're asking you fiqh questions, ahkam questions. Tell me, is this music haram or not? I say, listen, this is the criteria. Application of it, I have no right to apply it for you. Even if I do, it's not binding on you. You have to apply it yourself. No. Tell me, yes or no answer. Don't you hate it when they do that to you? Yes or no answer. And personally, I believe that some denominations of Islam, many people adhere to those because it is a black and white version. Because it makes it easy. How easy it is, instead of you going and studying each of the Sahaba separately, how much easier it is for you to just say, okay, the Prophet said all of the Sahaba are good, and you just get on with your life. Yes? Lots of times, this laziness gets in the way of our akhirah and securing our akhirah. And the imams have taught us this in Sahifa Sajjadiyya. The imam takes refuge in Allah from what? Min al-kasal, laziness. Laziness destroys your akhirah. Laziness, you're lazy in your youth, you don't study hard, you don't, 20 years down the line, you're a nobody. Asking for help, if not committing haram to make a living. We seek refuge in Allah. Anyway, the ulama, they have not said it's not reliable necessarily, that it's something that is weak, and there's no way we can rely on it. No. What I've seen is that they have said, the ones that are let's not even use the word critical. They say that it's not the best of sanads. Sanad meaning chain of narrators. But of course, let me say one thing, that it's not just one sanad that we have for this. There are many asnad. And that's where other ulama we find. I'll name them now. Ayatollah Makarim Shirazi, Ayatollah Makarim, Sheikh. He, of the Maraji of Qum, we know him, right? He has a mafatih that he has, you can say, refined, a refined version of Mafatih al-Janan. It's called Mafatih Nuvin. It's in Farsi, though. I checked it there, and he said all these good things about the same hadith. The same ziyarah, a marja. His job, that's his job. If that's not enough, for me, this finishes the job. Ayatollah Uthman Shubayri Zanjani, I don't think many of you have probably heard of him, but he is, it is safe to say, the top rijali marja of Qum, of maybe the world even. May Allah protect him. It was interesting. I asked one of our teachers, I said, what about this sanad? Can we talk about it a little bit? He said, oh, haven't you seen the article of Ayatollah Shubayri Zanjani? I said, whoa, he has an article, let's see it. I went 2.5 pages. He says, yes, this sanad has this individual, this individual, this individual. We have to work on them. Work on them. It's not mathematics. Work. So he starts bringing clues. This, 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 this. He lists. This one is Mashayikh al-Thuqat. This one may be Ashab al-Ijma. This one in the same tabaqa, we have two different rabis. One of them is not good, but the other one's good. He goes all through all of that, and he ends with one line. He says, so, as a conclusion, the sanad of this ziyarah is sahih. Oh my God, I was so happy when I saw that. So uplifting. If anyone is going to find fault in the sanad of something, it's going to be him. He is known for his strictness in different issues. I'm not going to get into them. Certain practices that we have sometimes, he is very strict. But here, when he works on it, in the end he says, it's sahih. But add to that one more thing that both Ayatollah Makarim Shirazi has pointed to, has pointed to, and Ayatollah Shubayri points to also in this article. He says, they both say this, and others have said this, and we all know what they're talking about, because in a way or another, whether we have felt and experienced it or not, this is something that is there. And they say this, they say, both of them say, this ziyarah that so many greats have always been reciting, that so many people have received certain things in this life as a result of continuing it. If this is all we had as a reason for its reliability, it would be enough. That's what they say. How many people have gotten shafa from their illnesses because of this? How many doors have been opened when you felt that the doors were locked on you because of this, continuing this? So many. And if you look at the rewards that are said for doing this ziyarah, that the companion of the imam, he tells the other companions about what the imam had told him about this ziyarah of Imam Hussein, ziyarat Ashura, it's something that has the whole package. It has all those rewards. Plus, it is inshallah reliable and authentic. Plus, when we look at the content, the content is supported by other hadith, by other ziyarat, and you don't find anything in it that is problematic either. So inshallah, future nights we're going to be talking about this ziyarah. Just to sum it all up, the Ahlul Bayt wanted to keep the blood of Imam Hussein fresh and alive till today, so that me and you are sitting here, or else you can be sure me and you would not be here. So they kept it alive through different means. One of those means was ziyara, teaching ziyara texts, ziyara literature, and transmitting them and spreading these amongst their Shia so that they recite this. This heritage has been passed down all the way till us. So questions sometimes come up. Okay, these ziyarat have to come from the mouth of the imam. How do we ascertain this? The imams have told us, rely on the reliable narrators. Okay, we're going to do that. How do we ascertain that? Through the sciences that have been established for this purpose, ziyarat Ashura, one of the greatest ziyarat, is also benefiting from this. And it has been, the problems that some people sometimes say have been taken care of by our great ulama. Inshallah, we're going to be going through excerpts of this ziyarah. Some of the teachings we can draw, conclusions we can draw from them. Why the imams have said, As-salamu alayka, ya ibn Amir al-Mu'mineen. Couldn't the imams have just said, As-salamu alayka, ya Ali ibn Abi Talib? What's the purpose? What's the history behind this? What's the history behind Sayyidatun Nisa al-Alameen? What is the history behind Aba Abdullah? As-salamu alayka, ya Aba Abdullah. Couldn't we say, As-salamu alayka, ya Hussein ibn Ali? And so on and so forth. All of these things, we're going to go through them, because as young individuals, usually, sometimes I'll say, we go through these ziyarat, but we don't get a good idea of what's being said. And I, of course, I don't guarantee that we'll get through all of it, but we're going to try to get through as much as we can, inshallah. Let's remember Aba Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam. As-salamu alayka, ya Aba Abdullah. I don't know what the secret is that the imams, not just Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, but the imams in general, for example, Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, when they were forced to, can we get this light too? It's bothering. When they were forced to leave Medina to go wherever they were going, for example, in the story of Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, they would come and go to the grave of the Prophet. Not once, not twice, come back and forth. Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, for example, they say he went so many times to the grave of the Prophet, he would come back. Go to the grave of the Prophet, come back when he had to go. And he told his family to weep for him when he's leaving. So that everyone knows he was forced to go on this trip. But what is the secret? What is the secret of this grave? When they go there, what's going on between them and the Prophet? I don't know. Imam Hussein is also one of those. He is forced to leave Medina. The day before, or the night before, or a couple nights before, the letter comes from Yazid that Muawiyah is dead. And that the governor of Medina has to take the bay'ah from Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Imam Hussein is enraged and he leaves. And then he says, there's no place for us here anymore, we have to go. So everyone is trying to stop the Imam. Ibn Abbas tries to stop the Imam from going. Muhammad bin Hanafiyah tries to stop the Imam from going. Salama tries to stop the Imam from going. The Imam in this time, he goes and comes to the grave of the Prophet. What does he say to the Prophet? And you can sense that the tone of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that this is it. This is the manifestation of وَفَدَيْنَاهُ بِذِبْحٍ عَظِيمٍ. O Ibrahim, if you're not going to sacrifice your son, don't worry. Another sacrifice is to come. You sense this in the tone of Imam Hussein. In the two narrations that we have when he's speaking to his grandfather, the Prophet, he says, peace be upon you, O Messenger of Allah. I am Hussein, the son of Fatima. He's telling history that if they killed someone, it wasn't a normal person. I am Hussein, the son of Fatima, your beloved son and son of your beloved daughter and grandson whom you left behind amongst your nation as a guide. So behold, O Prophet of Allah, they verily abandoned me and did not observe my status. This is my complaint to you till the day comes that I meet you. They say the Imam leaves. He goes back to the grave of the Prophet. O Allah, verily this is the grave of your Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, and I am the son of the daughter of your Prophet and that of the decree that you know has befallen me. We are all waiting for this time to come. This moment to come, it's coming now. O Allah, indeed I love good and despise evil, and I ask you, O possessor of majesty, by the right of this grave and the one buried in it, that you choose for me that which entails your satisfaction and the satisfaction of your Prophet. They say he would come out. Salma gets in his way. Salma, ya Ummah, what do you want to tell me? Salma. Umm Salma, that wife of the Prophet that was in love with the Ahlul Bayt, she had raised the Ahlul Bayt, Imam al-Hasan, Imam Hussein. She has seen the death of the Prophet. She has seen the Shahada of Imam Ali, the Shahada of Imam Hassan. Now al-Hussein is getting ready to leave Medina. Oh mother, she says to him, don't go, you're grieving me by going. Your grandfather told me that you will be killed in Iraq. But look at what Imam Hussein says. It's as if Imam Hussein is reciting his own masa'ib for Lady Salma. He says, oh mother, and I know that I will be killed and slaughtered oppressively and out of animosity. Allah has willed to see my women and children and my people scattered and estranged, made prisoners and in chains, pleading for help, while they find no one to answer their call. Al-Hussein has to leave Medina. I'm just going to say this, that when he's leaving, maybe he remembers those days when he's bidding Medina farewell, that those days that he bid his mother Fatima farewell. When Ali ibn Abi Talib ends the ghusl of Lady Fatima and he enshrouds her, he says, Halummu tazawwadu min ummikum. My children, come and see your mother for the last time. Zainabain, Hassanain. Come and see your father for the last time. They say Hassan and Hussein came first before the daughters of Lady Fatima. They threw themselves on the chest of their mother Fatima. They're never going to see their mother again, the one that stroked their hair. Their beloved young mother has to be buried. Hussein is on the chest of Fatima. Ya Aba Abdullah, who was on your chest? Who was on your chest on the day of Ashura? In those final moments, Hussein is dragging himself on the plains of Karbala. They say his eyes are blacking out, he can't see anymore. All of a sudden, the chest of Abu Abdullah is heavy. وَالشِّمْرُ جَالِسُ عَلَىٰ صَدْرِ الشِّمْرِ. Sitting on the chest of Hussein. Ya Allah, give us the tawfiq on these nights to remember Abu Abdullah. To remember the pains and sufferings of Abu Abdullah. Give us tears to shed out of sincerity for Abu Abdullah. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-aliyyil azim. Wa sayalamu alladhina zalamu ayyamun qalabin yanqalibun.